And what I want to share with you also is significant. You know, I would say I first came across this work around language and conversation in a version of it in the early 90s in Nepal through a Nepali consultant returning from the States, from training and working in the States. And when I came back to Perth in 95, I discovered an Australian guy called Alan Seiler, Ken's aware of some of this stuff, running an 18-month diploma of professional coaching based on this work. I was in my early 40s. And it remained some of the most significant transformational learning I have ever done. I live and breathe this every day, personally and professionally. And it may not touch you at all, and that's fine, but that's where it's coming from for me. And maybe back at the end, there is nothing explicitly in terms of Bible verses in what I'm going to do today. But part of why I love about this work, it's given me a language to draw people from a range of faiths into what I think is heavily kingdom work. We're going to look at speaking and listening today, and it's going to be active. I want to give you an experience, an experiment that I'll step you through. Nobody has to do or say anything you don't want to, but I'll invite you to engage with it. And then I want to offer you some tools and models for building on it. So let's get started. So this work that I discovered in Nepal got my attention because of this basic statement. I'm sorry, let me also say, I'm going to use the whiteboard to diagrams and stuff at the end. I will send the Mount Hawthorn list a soft copy of material I'm going to walk you through today rather than print lots of things. And if there's anybody who doesn't have access to that, who would like a hard copy, talk to me afterwards and I'll make sure I print some off and bring them next week or sometime, okay? If that's useful. All right. So the work that I do in organisations and in life is based on this simple premise. You don't have to agree with me, but I'd like you to engage with it and play with it. That organisations, communities, families are first and foremost networks of conversation and relationship. This means that the primary competence for leadership, and I would actually say for being human, is conversational competence. Being able to have the right conversations at the right time. If you want to assess the health of a family, a community, an organisation, listen to the conversations. If you want to shift the health of a family, a community, organisation, shift the conversation. Simple, but I think it's truly profound. And in the back of this, think of how much of your work or your life involves conversation. And if you include email, we can have a debate. It's probably up 90%. And if you include the conversations you're having with yourself, it's even higher. And so, and another simple quote before I get going on this is, there's another quote by a guy who says, language was the first technology of humans, but like other technologies, not fully understood. People thought it was merely a tool for describing the world and didn't know it was a tool for creating it. So that's what we're going to play with. And so this is an opportunity, and what I'd say is, for human beings, for leaders in organisations, for all of us as human beings, language is to human beings like water is for fish. Not that I've discussed it with a fish. But that notion of it's this medium we swim in every day and rarely pay much attention to. We just do it. And so the purpose of today is to invite you to start paying more attention to the power of your language. And the simple, really complex idea is that in any conversation, there are two parts to a conversation. There is speaking and there is listening. And what we're going to do is focus on listening, because my experience is in most of our world, we give priority to speaking. And so if Lindy and I are having a conversation and she doesn't understand what I'm trying to tell her, what is typically what I do? I'll say it again, I'll try and say it differently, I'll try and say it louder. Meanwhile, probably thinking, what's wrong with her? Why is she so stupid? Kind of true? Overgeneralization. So this session, and this is where I start in most organizations, is to focus on listening. And I'm not going to teach you how to listen. I think that's part of the problem. We literally are going to do a scientific experiment in listening. So I want to do an experiment where you notice what happens in your listening when I read you something. So I'm going to read you something aloud, and I'm going to ask you to notice your listening. I'm going to draw some. Actually, in a scientific experiment, is we do something, we observe what actually happens, true, and then we draw some conclusions. And that's what we're going to do. I'm not going to teach you to listen. We're going to do some listening, draw out some observations about what actually happened, and then I'm going to invite you to say, I'll give you a few models to interpret what happened. And then we're going to have a conversation about, well, so what? If this is what actually happens with listening, what implications does that have for our life and our relationships? That kind of makes sense? All right, let's do the experiment. So, first part of the experiment, I sound very loud, is that all right? Is for everybody just to sit quietly. You might want to even shut your eyes while I read you something aloud. Your only job is to sit quietly and notice, listen to your listening. Notice what happens in your head as I read this aloud to you. Simple. So notice what happens to your thoughts. Your thoughts, your feelings, maybe even your body, as I read this aloud. And then we'll get some feedback about what actually happened. Okay. Here we go. Experiment beginning now. Listening is a rare happening among human beings. You cannot listen to the word another is speaking if you are preoccupied with your appearance or with impressing the other or are trying to decide what you're going to say when the other stops talking or are debating about whether what is being said is true or relevant or agreeable. Such matters have their place. But only after listening to the word as the word is being uttered. Listening is a primitive act of love in which a person gives himself to another's word, making them accessible and vulnerable to that word. And that's by William Stringfellow. So, end of experiment. Just sit there for a moment and then I'm going to ask a question. So next stage, what I'd like is some feedback, or some storytelling actually, not feedback, from a few of you. And what I would like, and I might coach you a bit about this, I'd like to hear you report what you noticed happening in your head. So I'm not after your conclusions, I'm not just interested in the content, what you thought about the content of this, but the story of what actually happened, you know. I got irritated by Michael's sniff. I noticed, I started listening, but then I started to think about all the stuff I've got to do at home. You know, I'm interested in whatever you noticed about the journey of your listening. Come on. And I'm going to coach you a little bit to get what I want, but also because it's helpful.
As you talked about listening, and are you listening to trying to impress the person you're listening to? And every time you came up with one of those, are you listening and getting ready an answer or debating? I thought of times when I did that, or I was in that situation where I related to every single one of those.
So every time I said those things,
yep,
you thought of a time when you were doing exactly what I
or
said.
Or someone was, I felt someone was doing that to me.
To you.
Yeah.
All right. Now that's kind of what I'm after. And I'm after, but as much as you can tell me, step one, step two, step three, step four. No, no, because I want to hear whatever happened in your listening. Steve?
I thought about all the times that I didn't listen.
All right.
Probably.
Now what I would like to hear is, all right, Tyson, I'd like to hear a story of step one, step two, step three, if you can, rather than a summary. I'm not criticising the summary, because it gets the point. Tyson?
With each of those instances that you described,
yep,
I've visualised them in my mind.
With each so, one?
Yeah, and I know that I'm a visual learner and speaker.
Just tell me what happened. So, you got
images,
a picture
I had these images,
of something.
Just a montage of images as I was going.
What kind? Give me an example of an image you had, if you can, if you want to.
I was sort of, so I was picturing a bunch of people in a conversation, and they were all, it was almost like a parliament or something, you know, ready to jump at each other and, you know, give an answer or whatever.
All right. Ken. What up? All right.
Yeah, mine's diagrammatic. Sort of, you're talking, I'm going along, and then I'm flipping back and repeating that to myself, but I'm also going off in three other directions at the same time. And when you start the next one, I go, no, I've not finished thinking about that one. And then I have to, oh, well, I have to jump onto the next one now. And so I loop around that one and go off in three directions.
And give me an example of a couple of the directions you went off on.
Oh, like Thelma was saying, examples, and oh, yes, that happens, or just reactive thoughts.
And what I'm interested in the detail of some of those thoughts. Ken? Hang on. For the sake of the recording.
When you asked us to listen, I became a bit like a radio receiver that had a really broad reception. So I started hearing the kids up the back, the people upstairs, your voice, my own voice, and also silence.
And what was your own voice saying to you?
My own voice was just repeating back what you said to me.
Okay.
Without assessment.
Good. There's somebody else. Trish? A couple more and then we'll move on.
When you first started, I found my mind was roaming around trying to find examples of what you were talking about. And one of the examples that popped into my head was a discussion with one of my students.
Yep.
And I was still doing that, and you moved on. The bit that caught my attention was, it's an act of love. And I went, oh, I haven't thought of that before. And I thought about it for a minute and went, yeah. And then you mentioned vulnerability, and I went, oh, that's a new idea. What does he mean by that? And then went, yeah, that's true, yeah. And then start to think about an example of where I was vulnerable by listening.
Thank
that
you.
Way.
And Trisha, if I could paraphrase, primitive act of love caught your attention,
mm-hmm,
and then you effectively stopped listening to me for a while,
yep,
and listened to, had that conversation with yourself.
Yep.
Then vulnerability caught your attention,
mm-hmm,
and then you went off and had a conversation with yourself.
Yeah, and I was looking for an example of how that applied to me.
Yeah. All right. One more story of what happened, if you like. Bobby. Yeah, thanks, Lee.
I did listen to what you said, because you said to listen, otherwise I might have wandered off somewhere. And like Ken, I did hear the kids in the background. The thing that really struck me was when you started talking about the different things that distract you so you don't listen to somebody, is a situation that I sometimes find myself in where I've gone somewhere to meet somebody
and Bobby, I'm going to stop you there, please, because I don't want to hear about...
Well, this is a situation that made me think of it.
All right.
And I'm waiting to see somebody, but someone else is talking to me.
So
I'm looking all the time to see the person that I came to see and not concentrating. And I find it absolutely impossible to concentrate on what the person who's talking to me is saying.
So that's what it made you think about.
That's what I thought about when you talked about those different things.
So your mind went off to think about that scenario.
Yeah.
Sorry, thank you. Yes. Any more? So what other people will often say, the sort of things they'll say is because you said I should listen, I tried to listen really hard. So I was having this conversation with myself saying I should listen, I should listen, I should listen, so they didn't listen. Really common. And a whole range of other things. So some people think in words, some people think in pictures. So how come... my theory would be, from a cognitive biological perspective, that I read you the same thing and we've heard a number of different listening experiences, and I would bet everybody has a different listening experience. So I'm going to ask you kind of rhetorical questions that are sort of obvious, but we often don't think about it, but I want some answers. So how come, however many people in this room can hear the same thing, but have a different listening experience? And what particular... yes, it is. What are the different... So it's affected by our life experiences. I don't think we can try and capture all this. I want some quick, short answers here. So life experiences, what else? Anything in particular? Or? Yeah. Personality? Our concept of reality? What's happened in the past hour? How we're wired? Meaning that we distract ourselves with our things? Precisely. Precisely. Phil? Our mood on the day? What happened last night? What you know of me, whether you like me, dislike me, respect me, disrespect me, whether I'm more senior than you, junior than you. True? Sorry, Karen? Yeah. Whether I'm feeling pressured will affect how well I listen to you. Being physically able to hear. So our physical ability. In fact, there's a range of things about our physical bodies that affect how we listen, how tired I am, how blah, blah, blah.
And the other person's physical body as well.
How we view their physical body will affect how we listen to them. Yeah. Yeah. What do you mean, Gary? Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Tyson?
Who else is in the conversation?
How might that affect?
If it's a one-on-one private conversation versus the whole group.
Could do. So our thoughts about what's going to happen as a result of what I'm listening. So our private conversation with ourselves about what's going to happen with my listening. All right, let me put up a bit of the material. So in this, the primary model of this that I find really simply powerful is called private and public. Conversation model. And this is my powerful artwork. And it says that in any conversation between two people, there's actually three conversations going on. There is one public conversation going on, what we're saying to each other, and in that I'm not just meaning words, I'm meaning body and emotion as well. We show up with all of that, being listened to, being reacted to, whether we know it or not. Okay, so language and motion. And in this body of work, they talk about our way of being, how we show up in the world, is always a dynamic interaction of our internal conscious and unconscious language and our external language, which create our emotions, and language, emotion, and body is held in our physical bodies. Affects our tension, our breathing, our posture habitually. So all of that is how we listen. So there's one public conversation, and that would be, you know, if I was watching you two talk, I'd sort of, or video it, that's what we'd see. We could interpret. And then there are two private conversations going on. Kind of make sense? Which, is it the public or the private? Kind of rhetorical question, probably unfair question, I'm going to ask it anyway. What has more significance for whether we communicate well or not? The public or the two privates? Yeah. And yet we rarely pay much attention to finding out what's in the public and private. And we rarely notice our own private conversation. And this is sort of the mindfulness, this is the contemplative prayer stuff for me. So let me flip that over for a minute. So just sit with that notion based on your experience. And then I want to give you three other bits of information. So in this model, as I said, it suggests that there are two parts to a conversation. There is speaking and there is listening. And I said before that we tend to emphasize speaking rather than listening. And if we do emphasize listening, my experience of much of the communication training is just about how we listen to the other person. How we communicate with the other person. What is not emphasized, and what I'm emphasizing here, is at the same time as we listen to the other person, we need to get better at listening to ourselves. Because if we don't know what's going on in our private conversation, then we are just reacting to the other person. We're not paying attention to, are we distracted or not? Am I just reacting because they push my buttons or not? So it says that this is saying we need to get better at learning to listen to ourselves as well as listen to the other person. And how it shows up in speaking is, in this model, so there's two particular forms of speaking we need to get better at. The first is genuine inquiry and the second is unattached advocacy. So genuine inquiry is getting better at asking genuinely open and honest questions, not questions with an agenda, or not closed questions, which we're really very good at, but questions that come from a genuine desire to ask the other person what they're thinking and feeling about something, which helps them know what they think and feel, but also gives us better information about what they're thinking, what's creating their background interpretation. And then unattached advocacy is a deliberate kind of funny word. Most of our conversations in the workplace are discussion-based, debate-based. True, a lot of true. I'm trying to convince you of my case. So there's a strong attachment and force behind what I'm pushing, of varying degrees, sometimes a lot of feeling. The notion of unattached advocacy is that I take responsibility for knowing what I'm thinking and feeling about something and disclosing that to you, but not in a way that's in your face, so we can have a conversation about what we both think and feel. So that to me is how they link up. And the other word, going back to listening, and then I'll stop. The three A's of listening. Always, automatic, already. So in this model, the notion of listen to me or try and listen to me doesn't compute. This model of human beings, which is biological and cognitive, says we don't have to try and listen. Human beings are always listening. We are running stories and interpretations in our heads all the time, even when we're asleep. So if we want to get better at listening, it's not try and listen, it's notice what we're listening to. Who are we listening to? What are we listening to? And what's the impact of that or the relevance of that to the situation I'm in? I'm always listening. I'm automatically listening. It just goes off in my head. And I'm already listening is the notion of if you walk into a room for a meeting, you have already had a conversation about that meeting before you walked in the meeting, and it will affect your behaviour. So if there are people you like, there are people you think you're going to have a good meeting with, you'll go up warmed up to have a good meeting. True? If there are people who you think are going to attack you or you don't like, you will have already set yourself up for how you're going to act in the meeting. So it's an example again, is we're always listening to something, it's how well that's serving us. So just create little groups where you are. Rather than take questions right now, I'm going to stop there. Huddle around. So what? From that experience of listening and then some of those models there, what's useful for you when you think about having conversations in the future? What strikes you as being useful and what difference might that make for the way you show up in conversations? So take about a few minutes to talk to each other, and then we'll hear some thoughts and maybe some further questions. I'll give you 5 minutes. So what I'd like to do, I don't want to hear a kind of group report or anything. I'm interested in hearing back from you personally. So I'm interested in hearing what was useful out of that for you and how might it change how you listen, how you talk with people. Or you may have questions or comment challenges about any of the model, because you may not agree with any of it either, or may not quite understand it. Jenny.
I was interested in hearing more about something you said right at the beginning about changing the way the conversation works.
Mm-hmm. It's a question for me to answer.
Did
that offer you any thought?
I was trying to relate my interest in that bit at the beginning to what you said later, and I didn't get very far in terms of how that worked.
Okay. I mean, yeah. For me, conceptually, I mean, this is just a snippet, is if we go with the notion that we are always automatically already listening, but a lot of our listening is unconscious to us. So, actually, there's a quote by Stephen, the leadership guy, Stephen Covey, that I always misquote and never remember. But it's something like, between action and reaction, there is a moment of choice. Between action and reaction, there is a moment of choice. So linking to what you're saying is, this model would say is an awful lot of our communication is reactive with people. They say something to us and that just pings off our listening. And actually, I forgot to put in here. A fundamental here is listening always equals the physical act of hearing and interpretation. The notion of objectivity is bullshit. Because biologically, no two people can ever be the same. So when Lindy says something to me, she may think she's being really clear about what she's saying, but she's speaking out of her private personal conversation. But it will land in my private conversation and trigger me off on whatever I'm listening to. Does that make sense? Jen, does that make sense? So, sorry? What? You may have heard those words before, but they're linked to your particular memories around that thing, which are going to be different to Lindy's. So the point being is that if I want to do more than just react out of my interpretation, I need to notice my interpretation, and it may mean I think and not assume that my automatic interpretation is what she's trying to say. So the ability to shift the conversation depends on how much responsibility I'm taking for noticing my private conversation. That to me is the connection. And I have more choice if I'm getting better and better at listening to my private conversation, then I have more choice about what I do with it. And private conversation is not good or bad, it just is. And as a coach, a lot of my good questions come out of paying attention to what interpretations I am making, but not presuming that they're accurate. Which is what reactive listening is. I assume I don't even know that I'm reacting out of an interpretation. I just react. Michael.
Can I just extend that idea a little bit? You talked about the public conversation and the two private conversations that are going on. And you've spoken of not only paying attention to the public conversation, but your own private conversation. I think part of effectively conversing is also paying attention to the other person's private conversation, because the two private conversations are feeding into the public conversation, right?
Of course they are.
And the better you get to know somebody, the more you'll have a sense of what's going on inside their head when they're speaking, and it's not necessarily the same as what's coming out of their mouth, but you will understand what's going on behind that. So you have to also be listening to that and be aware of... I mean, we all have to start with some assumptions, I think. I mean, that's just how we get through life.
Absolutely. And sometimes we're right and sometimes we're wrong. Yeah.
But we always have to start with something to get a move on.
Yes.
And so part of that is taking a moment to think about what the shape of that other person's private conversation might be
like. Yes.
In this particular conversation.
And or we can ask them a question to find out.
And that's one of the things that we can do is ask those. And know which questions are likely to get an answer that we're able to understand. Yeah.
And the notion that we've known them a long time, therefore do know, is also risky. Seriously. No, recently, with my relationship with Lyndon and some other people, I was realising I was getting very frustrated, this is true, with Lyndon and some other people I thought should know better because they wouldn't listen to me. They would interrupt me all the time. This is really true, recently. So I got in touch with my private conversation, is that I was getting frustrated, and I would express it to Lyndon, that why wouldn't she listen to me, because her pattern of conversation is way different to mine. I go slower. And as I thought about that, I got some coaching about that. I realised what was going on is there were certain people in the world, like my wife, who's known me for 40 years, loves me, I know, like some of my work colleagues who have done the work I've done on communication, who I had a self-righteous fundamentalism going in my head, is they should know how to listen to me. Yeah? And then I step back from that and I said, what is that about? And what I realised was that in Lyndon's case, this is really true, is I was confusing. I thought she should know how to listen to me. And I realised that in my heart of hearts, I have a deep human desire to be for someone else to really understand me, to really get me as a person. Right? Which is an okay thing to want. And then I got to thought biologically, even after 40 years, Lyndon is never going to be me. So the only person who can really get me is me. And I was getting frustrated with Lyndon. I was punishing her, really, because she didn't really understand me. Whilst I know that she fully loves me, I know that she respects me, I know that she values what I do. But she doesn't understand, doesn't fully understand me. And so I've started letting go. And so the notion that she ever understands me is amazing. Well, and in a practical way, is how I experience it is I might start a conversation. I'd say most of the time when we're doing stuff, sitting in the apartment, and I say something, she will never respond to what I say, really, in the way that I thought she would. Yeah? Because she's off on her own. I'm interrupting a private conversation she's already in. Make sense? And so I would get frustrated that she wouldn't respond as in my head I thought she should. Rather than saying, actually, I might have to say it again or say something different. But this is really powerful stuff. I was getting frustrated with her. Last one and then we'll stop.
Maybe echoing what was said on the other side of the room there, the word commitment really came to me earlier in the context of this stuff doesn't, like you said, it's all this automatic stuff that happens, and it takes a real commitment and choice, what you said, choice. And it's not just a choice, in this conversation I'll listen properly, but actually it strikes me as it's almost like a lifestyle choice. It's a real commitment to change how we are and how we engage, rather than just being something that's on the basis of each conversation.
And Richard Rohr, way back when I first started following Richard, and this has come out of sort of Buddhist meditation stuff, what this is about is he says most of us, particularly men, need a head transplant. So he says most of us are dominated by our reactive, controlling, busy, analysing mind. We're always talking to ourselves busily to figure things out. And this is about learning to notice that. This is the mindfulness stuff. And let that settle and quiet. And then the Buddhist notion is beginner's mind, where we simply notice without doing anything with it what's going on in our heads and hearts. and that that shifts who we are in time. But it's not a quick fix. It takes a lot of time. And so I'm not, in, out of this for me, I'm not trying to, I'm not encouraging you to do anything with your listening. But if this rings any bells for you, it's about beginning to practice noticing your listening. And I think this is also where we learn to listen to God differently. We listen to what's quietly in us, not busily in us. I should probably stop. But I'm very happy to talk further with people. And if this is any interest, you know, I've got good colleagues who are running an introductory workshop of this in a few weeks, if that's of any interest to anybody. This is life-changing stuff. This is mindfulness stuff.
Okay, into the microphone. The children and I have been talking about listening at the back, and I've invited them to have a conversation with one of you after, in the coffee time. We've been talking about, like in the book, how each of the characters had a different perspective on the day, and I've asked them to see if what your perspective on this morning might be. But as we were talking, one of the things that they said was that they find it quite scary to talk to the grown-ups in this church because they don't feel like they know you very well. And we talked about the conversation going on in their head when they're talking to you is, I'm quite scared about this. So I thought I'd share that with you as to help you as you're talking to our children and to encourage you in this next coffee break time, if a child looks like they might be trying to start a conversation with you, they might be a bit scared and I've asked them to have a conversation with you. So over to you.
Do you remember yesterday?